Hello, and welcome to the Television Spotlight on the Comic Book Cage podcast. My name is John Mayo. In this episode, we'll be having a spoiler-filled discussion about a television show that we think you'll enjoy. In this episode, I am joined by my sister Kay, and we're going to have a spoiler-filled discussion about season one of The Inhumans. That is the eight-episode TV season we just watched. We marathoned the whole thing in one sitting. Not only are we going to spoil Inhumans, we're probably going to spoil Agents of S.H.I.E.L.D., in which The Inhumans have appeared, many other aspects of the Marvel Cinematic Universe, possibly, and of course touching on The Inhumans in the comics and other things of that sort. Possibly making some comparisons maybe to the DC shows or whatever, but...
The DC shows, the Netflix shows, you
name
it.
Absolutely the Netflix. Certainly, to me, the entire Marvel Cinematic Universe is relevant to the discussion.
Yeah. If it's superheroes, it's fair game, feels appropriate.
Yeah. Overall, I really enjoyed this.
Yeah.
Well,
starting simple, it was a nice... well-contained arc of eight episodes.
Well, and that's what I was going to start with. It was a choice between, did we want to watch this or Punisher, which mm-hmm. just dropped recently on Netflix. That's 13 episodes, about 12 hours. This was eight episodes, and it was under six. And I'm like, okay, we've got, you know, a block of time. We can easily do 6 hours.
Yeah.
And it, storytelling-wise, reminds me a lot of the Netflix shows. Because each episode stands solid. I don't want to say stands on its own, because it's not done in one. It's not episodic.
No, but it has beginning, middle, end.
Yeah, there's a story that is, it's a solid chapter of a book.
Yes.
And a fulfilling chapter of a book.
Yeah, that's a good analogy.
But it's an eight-episode story.
Yeah, and it feels like the first book in a series, whether it's a trilogy or what, mm-hmm. I don't know. But it definitely ends with a, you're not done in this universe, you're coming back for another book.
This was a segment in the Inhumans' history of which there have been stuff to dive into before, possibly. Certainly it ends on a turning point and a new beginning comes out of this.
I will say I wish they had given a very concrete time. This is now. This is something to orient me.
That was one of the things with this is it is presumably part of the Marvel Cinematic Universe. I'm certainly treating it as such. It's Marvel's Inhumans. It's an ABC show. It has everything that indicates it is, except any solid connection in the story. Other than mentioning how people on Earth had gotten the stone covering and broke out and became Inhumans. Referencing what had gone on for a few seasons over in S.H.I.E.L.D.
There was a reference to freaks with powers disappear. Mm-hmm. And there was a reference to shouldn't people like you be on registry.
But no mention of S.H.I.E.L.D.?
Yeah.
The Avengers. There was a mention of God of Thunder.
Yes.
But not even Thor specifically.
Yeah.
So not having any...
context.
Yeah. Well, context, contact, or touchstones, both in terms of solidly setting it in that universe, but to your point, setting it in any particular time in that universe.
Yeah. Well, and for me, honestly, part of why I wanted that time context is because there was talk of satellites being used to track things here on Earth and a rover on the moon and a few things like that. And I just wanted to know, where are we space program wise? I mean, admittedly, it was a private corporation doing the rover on the moon, and that was about all we got, which was kind of a now context.
Everything indicated present day, give or take a few years.
Yeah.
But I mean, the notebook computer the scientist had.
True.
Everything seemed contemporary.
And it was all just very implied. And I guess that was just the... I just wish it was less implied.
I mean, the context is based on the Inhumans references from Agents of S.H.I.E.L.D. Is it's certainly after third season of Agents of S.H.I.E.L.D., possibly before, concurrent, or after fourth season.
Mm-hmm.
And there was a time or two where that lack of connection really kind of, it's like, well, where does this tie in? There's a reference to somebody having a boss who is that boss and never getting an answer to that.
Well, there's also Black Bolt alluding to, you know, we've exchanged one danger for another. There's an enemy Maximus doesn't know about or understand, an allusion to a great enemy in space. And then there's how last season of Agents of S.H.I.E.L.D. ended off.
With Coulson in space, presumably the rest of the team too.
So there's a question of, is does this play into Agents of S.H.I.E.L.D. or not?
I think it's playing into the bigger storyline of the cinematic universe, whether it dovetails or not, given that the Inhumans series ends firmly on Earth and last season of Agents of S.H.I.E.L.D. ended, it seemed, pretty firmly in space.
Yeah.
That it feels like there's a disconnect there, but it feels like it ought to tie in.
Well, but this also ended with something very noticeable happening on the moon that would draw attention.
Now, I have seen the trailer for fifth season of Agents of S.H.I.E.L.D.
I have not. I'm still on my, I'm trying desperately to avoid spoilers.
All right, so I will, I'll not bring that in.
Okay. Well, I mean.
But there are things about what was in the Inhumans that I think ties into stuff we have seen already in the cinematic universe. If we add in a little bit of comic book knowledge. Now, I will say that this show, I think, was very well cast.
Oh, yeah.
The guy who played Black Bolt, yeah, he sold the role. Certainly Karnak did a you know, was very believable, terrific job there. Gorgon was probably the furthest afield from the look of what we saw on screen versus what we get in the comics. But like Crystal was pretty much dead on.
Her hair cracked me up.
The bizarre, not highlighting, but in the hair she's got kind of, in the comics she's got kind of an orange hair with a black band with a circle kind of
stenciled.
Well, in here it was stenciled on the hair like it was a dye job or something such. Or just part of her inhumanness. Whereas in the comics, I always wondered if it was like some funky hairband or something, you know. That
would make more sense.
Yeah, but they translated the look of the characters in their iconic costumes. Let me rephrase. Sometimes their iconic costumes, sometimes a more current take on their look, particularly with Karnak, because he had kind of the green hoodie and stuff. Versus the more traditional look he would have had back in the early days of the Fantastic Four back in the 60s. But pretty much for all the main characters, the look they had, you could find a very clear comic book reference point for it. I appreciated that. The character they went furthest afield with in some areas was Maximus.
Oh, interesting.
He's also the one they hit dead on in many respects, too.
I thought his experience through Terra Genesis was fascinating.
That was the thing they differed from the comics.
That's interesting, because I thought it was really fascinating.
In the comics, he has, if I recall correctly, kind of a commanding voice a la the Purple Man.
Oh, okay.
Okay, from Jessica Jones.
That's interesting, because he, at one point, he almost accuses Black Bolt of that. In just a throwaway comment of just this, you think nobody can think for themselves because around you they only do as you command.
Ah, yeah.
So for a while there, because I was trying to figure out, well, what is Black Bolt's power? Because until we got the flashback to his parents' death.
Oh, man, how effective was that scene?
Oh, wow, yeah.
And yeah. It was one that not only sold his power, why he doesn't talk.
Yes.
But also the relationship between the brothers, because what Maximus admits at the end was stuff we had pretty much picked up on.
Yeah.
Up front.
The brother dynamic made it pretty, yeah.
Well, and Maximus being just the insane one of the, I want power because nobody likes me.
Yeah.
Attitude. That arc, that whole plot line for the season is, if you go to all of the Inhumans storylines and stuff, and I am by no means a deep expert on this stuff. I have not read all of their appearances. I've read probably all of them since the mid-80s.
Okay.
Maybe not all, but most, mm-hmm. at the very least. But not like the early stuff and the Fantastic Four and all the appearances there and whatnot, all of Medusa's appearances elsewhere. But I'm familiar with them. I've mm-hmm. read many of them. But out of all of that, one of the go-to sort of things is Maximus trying to steal the throne from his brother.
Yeah.
You know, it's a classic plot line that stems back in literature literally centuries in various forms. Not that particular instance of it.
Well, but I was going to say, it's a classic plot line that stems back in royal families going back centuries in Britain.
Yes, there's a historical basis for this in many cases. But it's kind of the, you want to do an almost Arthurian slant on it.
Yeah.
You know, it's somebody stealing the throne. It's a go-to plot line.
Yeah.
But Maximus being, in the comics, he's Maximus the Mad.
Well, and actually, even right now, I believe, and I'm not going to try and name the country because I'll get it wrong, but in the Middle East, there is a country where most of the men in a royal family went missing within the past few months as somebody claimed the throne.
Take out all the other contenders, essentially.
Yeah. And it's, you know, he just decided all the brothers and brothers-in-law
yeah.
should just, you know, go missing.
Well, what was interesting here is, again, in the comics, Maximus has powers, mental command powers, and both of them have powers of the voice.
Yeah, and that's interesting.
Okay. But here, the direction they took is the Terra Genesis turned him human.
Yeah.
Not that he has no powers.
Yeah.
He is, at a biological level, no longer inhuman.
Yeah, and then to basically have in the Constitution of the Inhumans, thou shalt be inhuman to be king. It doesn't matter what your power is, but human cannot be king.
Whether that was in their equivalent of a constitution or not, or whether it was just, you cannot rule us if you are not one of us.
Yeah.
It was a little unclear what the leader of the Council of Genetics or whatever was exactly saying there, other than, I don't like you, go away, little boy. Yeah. Which, of course, causes him to, you know, topple the whole government, destroy the city, and things like that.
Well, and when they're later pointing out, you know, that Black Bolt's gift made him a weapon, which they felt made him a good choice by nature, if you will, as king, because it empowered him to protect the people. It was an interesting read on the situation.
In the comics, the Inhumans are a genetic offshoot of humanity that was created by the Kree, an alien species, and basically they tinkered with the DNA.
That's interesting, because this made it sound like they were a separate species.
Yes.
Yeah.
But similar-ish enough
yeah.
that when the doctor scientist guy was doing his DNA samples, whatever, it's not like you don't have DNA at all. It's not like it's completely, yeah. it's just yours is like a perfection of.
Yeah.
And if you think back a few seasons on Agents of S.H.I.E.L.D., Tahiti was a magical place.
Yes.
And when that was revealed as to how Coulson and intern Skye were saved and stuff, we had a blue alien.
Yes.
He wasn't named, but the Kree are blue-skinned.
Got it.
Or at least there is a blue-skinned version of the Kree.
Yeah.
Depends a little on the coloring, too, I suppose, but you get the idea. So when we got the flashback to Black Bolt getting information revealed by the Genetics Council leader and then referencing out of the frying pan into the fire sort of a thing, we have been shielded on the moon, not only from humans, but from the Kree.
Yeah.
And when the dome went and the chair lit up, the writing on the chair was very similar of the dots and the circles and stuff to what Coulson had been carving all over the place the one season.
Yeah.
Now, in the comics, obviously things are playing out differently in the movies and the TV show and stuff. Witness, different powers, different looks, whatever. But there is not only S.H.I.E.L.D. in the comics, but there have been a few other sorts of acronymish agencies that they've tried to varying degrees.
Lance, Javelin.
No. Sword.
I was on the right track.
And I don't ask me what it stands for. But it is, instead of the, it's the one that's protecting the Earth from the aliens.
Mm-hmm.
And it's one of the more recent ones. I'm trying to think how old it is. I'm thinking going back to the 90s. After they'd done enough crossovers and storylines in which the Avengers or other Earthlings had toppled alien governments or whatnot, we got used as a dumping ground in maximum security. As they've got alien, you know, criminals sort of just exile them to Earth, you know, and that sort of thing. And after a while, the other races, it's like that one little backwater planet is trouble.
Yes, it is.
So, again, outward facing kind of a deal. And there have been a few others with similar sword, shield. I'm trying to think if it was Spike or whatever some of the other ones were. But we haven't gotten anything involving Earth characters and space in the cinematic stuff other than Star-Lord and Guardians of the Galaxy.
Right.
But we haven't really had Earth, other than the Chitauri threat in the Avengers first movie, there really hasn't been a we need to worry about alien invasion stuff.
Yeah.
And this is one where we just had 1,400 people come from the moon down to Earth to somebody's backyard.
Yeah.
And it was suitably ambiguous as to who's and where.
Yeah, we didn't establish where it was. It didn't quite look like Roswell.
There was almost a concentration campish sort of a feel. But I applaud them for keeping it kind of ambiguous.
Yeah.
Because that gives them a lot more freedom when they do a second season of this, which I hope they do.
I actually thought that they were going for kind of the field of a football stadium.
And it could be. I mean, it was one of those things they could basically claim to be almost anywhere on the planet.
Yeah.
Other than maybe the Himalayas, which I only mention because that's where the Inhumans were based at one point, before they flew their city up to the moon. They actually sold the concept of, although they didn't name it as such, the blue area of the moon, where there is the Inhuman city, you've got the air and all that kind of a stuff, with the protective dome and whatnot.
They did well with that.
So I thought the effects there were really good. I thought the effects in a lot of places were good. Black Bolt stuff, Crystal's powers, Medusa's hair at the beginning.
That was great.
Where I thought they kind of dropped the ball a little bit, and it's funny because there are parts of it I thought they did really well, was Lockjaw. He looked great.
Mm-hmm.
It was like the compositing was very clearly kind of green screen sort of a deal.
Yeah.
And of course it is, because at best, they took a regular sized dog and filmed it. More realistically, they probably did a completely animated Lockjaw, so you have to kind of composite him in.
Yeah.
And they got the scale right, but those shots always felt a little weird.
Yeah.
And I'm not too keen on the effect they use when Lockjaw and somebody would teleport out. It would be as if a particle storm is suddenly flying up to the left.
Yes.
As if you could, I don't know, capture some of the particles, trap them in there and prevent them.
Yeah.
I mean, that just seems dangerous.
Yeah, they blew away like a dust storm.
And I always felt, and maybe there was the sound effect in the comics, maybe there wasn't, but there was more of a pop kind of a effect. But I thought the use of Lockjaw was great. Crystal was awesome. They captured the iconic royal family.
I thought Black Bolt seemed to have kind of a touch telepathy effect at times. And there were times when I wished they'd been clearer for me.
Don't think he did. I think it was really that people just knew him and kind of an I feel you sort of.
Yeah, it was just hard for me to tell. And then with, I can't recall his name, but the teenager who could see into the future, Banesh, something like that.
It's interesting because I'm wondering if he was kind of sort of a riff on the character they used for the recent Civil War storyline, Civil War II. In which they had an Inhuman, they could see the future, and the Avengers and everybody got wind of it, and they basically used him as predictive crime unit sort of a deal.
Well, with this one, they seemed inconsistent on whether or not it was skin-to-skin contact. In the beginning, it didn't require skin-to-skin, but then later they seemed to decide it had to be.
Yeah, it seemed to go contact basis.
Yeah.
But when Maximus first touched him at the beginning.
Yeah.
It was, you know, through the clothes that it seemed to do it.
Yeah.
And that could just be, you know, at the moment of Terra Genesis or whatever, it's a little stronger as you before you can control it.
Yeah, maybe.
But when the sister came out and she had the butterfly wings and can fly instantly.
Yeah.
To me, the amazing thing of Terra Genesis isn't that you get a cool power or a really hideous deformation, but that if you get the cool power, you instantly know how to use it.
What's amazing to me is if you go through it on the moon, you don't get the rock shell thing. The
cocoon. Because they're full inhumans.
Oh, well, that's a good point. Okay.
They're not half-breeds.
Yeah, that's a good point. And they have the phone booth to do it in.
Well, and they can touch the Terra Genesis crystals.
That's true.
Because there was a time at first when Crystal had to be moving it. I'm like, why does she have to be doing it? She's got the earth, wind, fire, all that kind of powers and stuff. Full elemental control. So I'm like, maybe that's it. But then she's got the cloth. They're putting the crystal on the cloth. I'm like, oh, so you don't want to touch it.
Yeah.
But cloth is enough of a barrier.
Yeah.
And I'm like, that's amazing. Is it just cotton or does it have to be other things? You know.
Yeah. Well, and the crystals seem to spread further on Earth.
Well, yeah.
They fill an entire office.
When Medusa at one point shatters the one crystal, it seemed to be a smaller crystal than we typically saw.
Well,
because it was, I don't know, battery size, you know.
Yeah, but the one on Agents of S.H.I.E.L.D. was a little one on a keychain.
I was thinking it was bigger, but you're probably right. But it did seem to expand voluminously, whereas this was just almost a little dust storm versus a big cloud of stuff.
Yeah.
So, not identical, but again, you could go to that was Terra Genesis stuff left on Earth versus manufactured and maybe synthetic or whatever. How did they do it over hundreds of however long they've been on the moon?
Yeah.
Lots of questions, few answers, but none of the story kind of hinged on it so much that those matter.
When I liked some of the flaws when they were dealing with Karnak, and it's, you know, Karnak can see all the flaws. Nope, not right now.
I think they should have set up his power a little better at the beginning.
Yes.
Because at first, he seems to die and then almost rewinds. So, oop, that didn't work.
Yeah.
And it was unclear if he was seeing the ramifications of his action and doing a simulation of what would happen to pick, or if he died and just rewound.
Yeah.
And that really threw into question, because when he's been dropped off on Earth by Lockjaw, and Lockjaw was supposed to get them all to the same place and doesn't, and he's like, stupid dog.
Yes.
He's got to climb down this mountainside in Hawaii, and he falls. And at first I'm like, I was expecting it to rewind.
Yeah.
So what they were going for, what I picked up on that, didn't quite match, but there was some amazing humor to be had with it.
Well, and then I was confused by, did Earth affect him? But of course, I'm used to the DC shows where, you know, the yellow sun affects people.
Affects Kryptonians. You know. And more, it's the lack of a red sun.
Just saying.
No, he'd been hit on the head, but I think they could have been clearer on that.
Yeah.
And you kind of have to, with a character like that, do something of that sort. Because if you've got somebody who can see the flaw and only does the workable plan that's going to get success.
Yeah.
It's how did Stephen Amell put it?
Yes.
Good decisions make for bad television. Bad decisions make for good television.
Yes, yes. One of my favorite quotes of all time.
There's got to be a good phrase to wrap around that, of the law of Amell or...
Yes, yes.
Something of that sort.
Amell's law of entertainment.
Law of decision making. It's one of those things that the character would be unworkable if you used him well. But they found a way to legitimately not use him well and to have the character grow as a result.
Well, but I liked in one of the episodes where it's, you know, I'm damaged. I can't see the flaw. And Gorgon looks at him and says, yeah, but they don't know that.
Yes. Bluff.
Yes. Yeah.
Well, and I loved how the Inhuman they're going up against is ready to shoot him, but it's like, he wants me to shoot him. He'll do something. I shouldn't shoot him. And just, there was a poker game going on there.
Yeah.
As he's like, he wants me to shoot him. That's a bad thing. He's like, don't shoot me, don't shoot me, don't shoot me.
Yes, yes.
It was fun. He did a, Ken Leong, I'm not sure how to pronounce his name. Anyways, did a terrific job in the role.
Yeah, he did.
And he's a character, Karnak, in the comics that is often incredibly unlikable, hard to deal with, and not lead character type.
Well, and I think that may be why they gave him the human relationship. And in fact, I think they gave almost every Inhuman a human relationship that humanized the Inhuman in a very positive way.
Black Bolt had the Fire Guy prisoner.
Yes. The human that turned out to be an Inhuman or a freak, but we didn't know it.
Who I would hope would play in next season.
Me too.
As could others from Agents of S.H.I.E.L.D. Let's see, for Medusa, it was the scientist girl, mm-hmm. the wannabe Felicity.
Yes.
Just so much like the character on Arrow. It was funny.
Yes.
And not, I mean, she was a good character, good actress. Too dead on the money.
Yeah.
That was distracting a little. For Crystal, it was Dave.
Yes.
The boy she met. For
Karnak, it was the girl at the drug camp.
For Gorgon, it was the surfer guys.
Yeah, he had multiple.
How about Lockjaw? We'll go with the vet.
I was going to say, yes, Audrey.
And boy, really, Triton is the one who didn't.
Yeah, you're right.
Of course, he was in the first and the last episode or whatever. He was barely in the thing.
Yeah. And, you know, poor Audrey really caught the short end of the stick when Dave and Louise teamed up against her.
Well, not as bad as it could have been, because she's basically trying to get the cops to check out Lockjaw, this space dog. And it's like, yeah, he's big, but nothing says he's from space.
And Crystal.
And Crystal and stuff. But they teleport out and basically make it seem like she's just the jealous ex.
Who locked Louise in the barn and then brought the cops to arrest her.
The fact that the cops didn't arrest the vet was a little surprising. It could have gone worse for her, is what I'm saying.
That's very true. The whole, yeah, we're not weighing in on this, but you better not call us again attitude was kind of funny.
I do think the agency Louise worked for was a little ambiguous. They named it a number of times.
Callisto, maybe?
But it was like this space agency operating out of what looked like a fairly empty, you know, warehouse-sized room.
Mm-hmm.
I mean, really, you've got this room that goes on and on, that's unfinished. You've got this high-tech wall of monitors. You can't, I don't know, build out a conference room, a break room, maybe, I don't know, some restrooms or something.
I loved when we're up at Adelan and they've got the footage that the rover sent down and they freeze it and it's, and what was this, Gorgon?
Yes, it looks like a hoof. They'll never know it's a hoof and they cut to
Louise.
But what gets me is Louise was working there. We see her boss, but her boss has a boss.
Yes.
That was the guy I wanted to know, who the hell is this?
Yeah.
You know, who was interested in the Inhumans?
Yeah.
But again, that's presumably a second season sort of thing. The other thing that we've got to talk about is the lead character, Black Bolt.
Mm-hmm.
He's got his own comic right now.
Oh, interesting.
Drew and I have reviewed an issue of that recently. And it's interesting reviewing a comic starring a mute character. Because invariably you need to have other characters always saying what the other one isn't able to say.
I thought it was interesting some of the conversations he and Medusa had here. In terms of her saying, I can't just be your voice. I'm your partner. You can't keep secrets from me and then expect me to be there with you having your back.
But there were a lot of conversations, because there were some great conversations like that. I agree entirely. Mm-hmm. But there were a lot where she or somebody else was having to respond with the note, no, I don't agree with this thing you just said. Let me repeat it for you.
Yes. Yes.
Versus just a no.
Yes.
Whereas it would have been fun for at least once for him to have been, and the fact he was signing I liked.
Yes.
But have him just signing wildly. She looks, he said no. And, you know, kind of a not trans, because there was a few times at the end where he's like, we're going to kill Maximus. And she's like, not translating that part. And he's getting a little annoyed.
Yes, yes.
And that sort of thing happens in the comics. But having an actor who can go through 8 episodes as the lead character saying 2 words in the entire thing at the end, goodbye, brother.
Yeah. I was debating if that was 2 or 3.
But was able to sell a lot of it on body language. On
he also said why.
You're right. He said three words the entire series.
Sorry.
But we're still talking, what, under 20 characters, including spaces and punctuation?
It was halfway through the series when you told me you wanted to see him attend a convention.
Well, I want to see him attend a convention with the one who plays Medusa.
Yes.
And the shtick I'd like to see them is they come out, they're waving to the crowd. She says, it's great to be here. He signs. She says he enjoys it too. But then, you know, and do that for just a little bit, just to see, you know. And then, of course, have one of the deaf interpreters come up and correct him on something.
Yes.
And then he's like, ah, enough with this. And then he just won't shut up. I would also think it would be funny for him at a convention panel just to be complaining about all the dialogue. Because I'm sure there are others who had just large chunks to go do, and he had none. He still had, I question, and I don't know, maybe he was actually doing real sign language. It didn't feel that way.
It was not American Sign Language from what I could tell. Mind you, I only know like 10 or 15 words, but when he said, I'm sorry, he wasn't using what I know or recognize.
No, certainly not any that I've seen in other stuff.
But there were also a few where it looked like he used a gesture for, say, trust, and then later use that gesture for something entirely different.
There seem to be a number of go-to gestures, kind of the two-handed point and a few things like that, that in context meant different things at different times.
Yeah.
Which isn't a problem, but I'm curious how somebody from the deaf community...
Yeah, me too.
...would feel, because they had, according to the IMDb page, considered having him do a voiceover, like a telepathy thing, but they felt this would play better.
Yeah.
And it worked well, but not once was he signing as somebody was facing away from him, kind of a thing.
He was signing when he was like a step or two in front of Medusa, who was behind him speaking for him at one point.
Yes, at the parlay. But I felt like, she should have had enough of a sense of what he was going to say and angle, because she was off to the side, not like he was blocking.
Okay.
But it was not the most convenient. There were a number of times they were side by side and she was translating while looking out and not at him.
Yeah.
I'm curious again how all that played for the deaf community, where that's just a fact of life for them.
Well, and one of the things that actually was sadly very believable for me was his genuine belief that his brother never bothered to learn his sign language. Because that is something that a lot of people who, where they're the only deaf person in their family, that's an experience they have.
And I took it as Maximus never asked him to teach him or something like that. Maximus figured it out on his own and withheld that knowledge.
Yeah.
It's.
But it was something where it was a, the brothers never tried to communicate together or share the language together.
I think even if they had, they were on such different wavelengths.
Yeah.
That they may have been able to exchange words, but not truly communicate.
Yeah.
In the comics, there are times where it's really unclear how Medusa just happens to know what he's thinking and stuff. Because there's, well, he would gesture or something, kind of a caption or whatever. But in a comic, you can't do that kind of a sign language because it requires motion, space, a lot of motion for what you're trying to do. It just, it's not as comic book page friendly as a word balloon.
Yeah.
Or a caption, or...
Yeah.
There are times Medusa seems psychic.
Yeah.
The hair from Medusa early on, I thought was just phenomenally well done.
That was an amazing effect. And the haircut was traumatic.
Yes. I can imagine you felt that way. As somebody with long hair.
Yes, I did.
Well, and it was also when she was describing it later to Black Bolt, along the lines of a description of like a rape scene or something like that, she was violated.
Yes, and the reaction Louise had up in the front seat of the car as she's driving, and she's realizing that that Medusa had gone through something traumatic before arriving, and she's reacting with the crap, I didn't realize something horrible had happened to this person before she stormed into my life and started threatening me and being a bully.
I'm curious if during a second season, how long Medusa's hair would have grown between now and then.
Yeah.
Because with the close cropped, her power was useless. But
I actually wondered if, depending on how precise her control was, basically if she could have turned her hair into short little spikes.
I think she could have, but the range is really...
Well, but she was headbutting.
Yeah.
Lorna at one point. That's what made me think of it.
Yeah. I don't know. The other thing would have been funny is if she could have, I don't know, spelled something out on the back of her head to tell somebody. I don't know. It was one where it kind of made sense for them to do that, both in terms of the story they were telling and also just for the practicality and pragmaticness of filming.
Yeah.
Just like Gorgon was wearing boots.
Yes.
That looked like regular people boots.
Yeah.
To cover the hooves and stuff. And we were always seeing him from about the thighs up.
Yeah.
There are things you do that way just to save money.
Yeah.
And I didn't feel it was a cheat. I didn't feel it was awkward or anything. And, you know, it worked well. And there were a couple of places where we would get, like, the Karnak vision charts and lines and measurements, and other times we wouldn't. But we don't need it for all of it. We got enough for it to make sense, sort of. Overall, I thought this was really well done.
Mm-hmm.
I think this arc-style storytelling is something that the Marvel Studios group has really learned and leveraged based on the Netflix stuff. I think it was also one of the major strengths of the fourth season of Agents of S.H.I.E.L.D.
Yeah.
Where they had three very solid arcs.
Well, and I think it's what worked with Agent Carter.
Yes, that would be another good example.
Yeah. I hope that they bring back Dave, the girl from the drug plantation, and Louise.
Going with Dave, Crystal did have a human boyfriend in the comics.
Interesting.
It was not Dave, but they had to replace.
Why?
One, the one they had was in New York, not Hawaii.
Mm-hmm.
And two, it was Johnny Storm of the Fantastic Four.
Well, there you go. I think using those humans to humanize these Inhumans was really good. And I think they did something nice with showing that everything they knew about Earth and humanity came from our news broadcasts.
Well, and that they had prejudice they didn't realize.
Yes.
Earth was not this hellhole they were afraid it was.
Yeah, but all they knew about was the violence and the terrorism because all they got was our news broadcasts.
I liked how that was a subtle commentary about don't believe everything you see, make your own assessments.
Yes, yeah, definitely.
Color it with firsthand knowledge where you can.
Yeah.
I will say that the city of Adelan, fantastic look.
Yeah.
Again, the dome effect on both sides, in and out, was terrific. The other thing I really liked was when we got to what I guess was the control room, that downstairs thing with the pool, the visions, the two people in the white hoods for whatever reason they were. No. Never figured out what they were.
No.
But they had this one shot kind of looking back up the staircase from the other side of the room, and there's the jagged kind of effect, which if you look at Black Bolt's costume initially, mirrors that, mm-hmm. and it's kind of what they use as the, I don't say the sign out logo or whatever, before the end pre-credit scene of Black Bolt's logo.
And it's his logo up in the throne room.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah.
So I thought that really showed that the set designers and stuff really gave this stuff some thought.
Yeah, they did a lot of nice stuff.
It was well designed. I liked also the cell phone equivalent comm band.
Yeah.
That could fit around the wrist, but it was like a slap bracelet, so it could straighten out and stuff like that.
Yeah.
Again, cool little widget and toy.
Yeah.
So I like when they have those kinds of doodads and technology to play with. They didn't overuse it. It wasn't a magic thing, but it was just, again, a sign of how their science and technology has evolved in a different way than ours.
Yes.
So overall, I thought this was a fun series. It's... Again, in 6 hours, a little under actually, you can easily marathon the entire season. And it really holds together that way. There was no point where it's like, geez, they jumped over something between these episodes, or geez, they're retelling it, or it's redundant, or it's awkward, or
Well, and they did something with Gorgon towards the end. They, on the one hand, I was bummed. I didn't want him to go through it. But it was a very nice cautionary tale in terms of, and this is why you don't want Maximus to get what he's trying for.
It's interesting because when Gorgon gets hurt here, there was a storyline in the comics not that long ago where he gets hurt. Back injury. So you've got this guy who's a fighter, who's literally a bull in a china shop kind of a thing, paralyzed from the neck down. I was wondering if they were going to go that way.
Yeah, interesting.
Now, of course, in the comics, as with everything in life and death in comics, it's easy to fix and wipe away with a simple plot device here and there.
I thought you were going to say an eraser.
No, no. At least here they didn't use a Lazarus pit.
They used a phone booth.
I used a phone booth. But a well-lit phone booth.
It was.
It just seemed odd that they were doing the Terra Genesis stuff in a fairly confined room with just the two booths, even with 1,400 people.
It was a coming-of-age ceremony, which I thought was an interesting approach.
It just seemed like not many people came of age.
Yes, but in a society of only 1,400, we didn't see all that many children.
True, true, and two a year or whatever. I don't know.
Even to a month or to a week.
I don't know how easy. Often they these things happened as much.
Exactly. Point. Exactly.
But it, I don't know. They did a good job with the Inhuman stuff. It was a fun show. It was solid story.
I want more.
I definitely want more. I think it was a solid group of actors.
Yeah.
And I would like to see them dovetail somehow into particularly the Agents of S.H.I.E.L.D. stuff. Mm-hmm. I think that's where it lends itself. And then also potentially the Avengers side of things on the cinematic.
Yeah.
You know, with the movies and stuff. But again, terrific stuff. I think for many years they were kind of struggling on the TV side of things. Agents of S.H.I.E.L.D. was in some cases shaky. Some cases it had its moments. But really it's in the last year or so, particularly with the advent of the Netflix stuff, where I think the writing has just dramatically improved on the TV side of it, on Agents of S.H.I.E.L.D. and stuff.
I was reading an article that said Agents of S.H.I.E.L.D. just barely got picked up for the season that's about to start. So here's hoping they pull out the writing again this season and actually get another season.
Well, I mean, let's face it, second season of Agents of S.H.I.E.L.D., in third season, there were some moments there where it's like, do they know where they're going?
Yeah.
There were other points where it's like, wow, they've turned the corner.
Yeah.
But it's had definite peaks and valleys.
Yeah.
And that's, I think, what a lot of people are reacting to. It was a little lackluster at the beginning of the first season, but turned around when it tied into a movie. And then second and third season, you know, they're dealing with a lot of unknown Inhumans and whatnot. And it just didn't have the tightness of story that they've really shown they could do over on Netflix, and now both with this, and to a degree, Agents of Carter, those two seasons.
Yeah.
And the later season of Agents of S.H.I.E.L.D., that when they really throw kind of their A-game at it, they can do some great stuff on TV, which can then expand the cinematic universe, but they don't always tie it all together well.
Yeah.
This is in the Marvel Universe, Cinematic Universe, by implication.
Yeah.
And if you hadn't watched Agents of S.H.I.E.L.D., you had no idea what they were talking about with those mention of the Inhumans both vanishing and how they would transform.
Well, and, you know, we mentioned we may talk DC, but over on the CW, you'll see in the background the names of businesses, whether it's seeing Queen Consolidated
Ferris
or
Air. Big Belly Burger.
Yes.
You know, things of that sort. There's enough things to connect.
Yeah. And there was none of that type of stuff here where there were just those little background eggs, Easter eggs, if you will.
You know, it's funny you mention that because we've got 20 episodes of Agent Carter. We've got, I'm going to say, 22 episodes-ish for four seasons. We'll say 80, 90 episodes of Agents of S.H.I.E.L.D. Add 8 for this. So, what's what? About 120 episodes. Can you name a single fast food place, restaurant, any sort of a business chain of any sort other than The Daily Bugle, which actually I'm not even sure they use because that's the Spider-Man stuff.
Stark.
Stark rocks on. Mm-hmm. I mean, out of the entire, I mean, TV movie type stuff in the cinematic universe, we really haven't spent much time where the average person was.
Yeah.
Whereas we can name a coffee chain, a burger place, and not that that's, you know, oh my God, that's amazing.
No, but it's the world building that makes you feel like you've spent a little time in that world and makes you feel a little more comfortable.
Yeah. It gives it a tangibility and a solidity and coherence or whatever that's almost subliminal at times. But it'd be like if you've lived in a town for a couple of years and you really couldn't name a single business in it.
Yeah.
It's like, well, where do you go grocery shopping? Where do you go grab a bite to eat or whatever? Where do you go for drinks or something?
Yeah.
Now, within humans, where we're spending a lot of time on the moon or, you know, the non-city parts of Hawaii, okay, I get it.
Yeah.
And sure, you could look around for the name of the cab company and a few other things. So they did name a few things. But again, with Agents of S.H.I.E.L.D., where they've covered the globe and we still haven't seen much of it in some respects. It's just, that's, I think, where they're focusing on their properties, their characters, and not really building the world as well as they could.
Yeah.
That's always one of the things I felt DC kind of did better in the comics anyways. You know, Star Labs and other, you know, well, of course, they've got so many rich people with companies, you know, LexCorp, WayneCorp, and so forth. I don't know. But yeah, I'm hoping they do another season of this. I was a little surprised it was only 8 episodes.
Me too.
But if they've got stories and they could do, here's a very solid thing, let's drop it, let's move on, and it comes back 8 months, a year, whatever, I'm okay with that.
Yeah.
You know, I'd rather have that than them feel the need to try to do another series that has filler or something like that. But again, based on that last season of Agents of S.H.I.E.L.D., I think the risk of that's pretty low. I think they've turned a major corner on the cinematic universe, and I thought it was solid to start with in general, but on the TV side, they've raised their game substantially.
Cool.
So anything else? We good?
I think we're good.
Cool.
The show notes and form for this podcast can be found at www.comicbookpage.com under the podcast and forum sections of the website. Please email us at theguys@comicbookpage.com and let us know what you think of what was discussed in this episode. Thanks for listening.